Okay. Good evening. I'll call the August 3rd, 2010 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in saying the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call of members.
Mr. Burbank? Mr. Burbank?
I'm here.
Ms. Chack?
I'm here, too.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer has asked to be excused. Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne will be arriving later this evening. Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Happy to be here.
Mr. Stein?
Sipping.
Mr. Here. Stein?
Sipping.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
With 13 members present?
Oh, right. Okay. I was trying to do the math. I'm sorry. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
And I would like to ask for an executive session this evening for real estate and personnel matters. Privilege of the floor from the public. We have two people signed up. We will start with Barry Stein from the Red Cross.
Madam Chair and members of the County Legislature, thank you for this opportunity to address you today. I'm Barry Stein, Executive Director of the American Red Cross here in Tompkins County. I'll start with a good news, bad news story about Joe, a retired and aging Major League Baseball pitcher who was paid an unexpected visit one night by his deceased former teammate, Bill. Joe seizes the chance to ask Bill a question, which has been rattling around in his brain for quite some time. Bill, please tell me, is there baseball in heaven? To which Bill responds, well, Joe, there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is there is baseball in heaven. The bad news is you're pitching tomorrow night. Similarly, the Red Cross is making the very best out of a good news, bad news scenario. The bad news revolves around keeping our head above water during significant leadership transitions, overcoming unflattering community perceptions which accompanied those transitions, and confronting the perennial concerns related to tight budgets and curtailed revenue streams. The good news is, with the support of the county and the United Way, we continue to respond to the critical needs of our community and to preserve the quality of the services we provide to the people of Tompkins County. So with that in mind, let me highlight some of the many accomplishments from this past year. In our homeless services program, we have shortened the length of stay in the shelter by 4 days. Also in homeless services, 95% of the individuals in our preventative services program have been maintained in their own homes without facing eviction. 85% of shelter residents who were successfully rehoused did not return to the shelter within 9 months or longer. We responded to 18 local disasters, primarily fires, and doubled the number of volunteers in our Emergency Services Disaster Action Team. Here in Tompkins, we raised over $100,000 in relief efforts for Haiti. In cooperation with many local organizations and sponsors, we collected over 7,000 units of blood to better the lives of 21,000 people in the New York Penn Blood Region, and I was informed when I walked in the door that the county collected 54 units of blood just today. We are the sole provider of blood to Cayuga Medical Center. In our health and safety program, we secured a grant from the Park Foundation to help subsidize training for daycare providers and low-income individuals in life-saving skills. Also in health and safety, we engaged over 12 new community partners to provide workplace training, including a very large contract with Cornell Contract College Facilities. In closing, I would like to briefly return to the baseball motif. Yogi Berra once said that when you come to a fork in the road, take it. I can assure you, at the American Red Cross, when we come to that fork in the road, we will not hesitate. We will not stand idly by. We will always take it on behalf of all our neighbors in Tompkins County. Thank you for your interest and your continuing support of the Tompkins County American Red Cross.
Thank you. Thank you, Barry. If you could pass this, the what you're, you have there, so we can get the numbers right, because there's a lot of important information. Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Bethany Schroeder from the Free Clinic.
Thank you, everyone, for having me in again today. As I've been here before, my name is Bethany Schroeder, and I am the Executive Director of the Ithac Health Alliance and Free Clinic. Today, I speak to you as a member of the Human Services Coalition and in representation of the Ithaca Health Alliance, and as I have done in the past, I stand before the Tompkins County Legislature in an effort to report the work and trends of the Alliance's primary charity, the Ithaca Free Clinic. Since my last brief presentation, the Health Alliance has compiled its statistics related to the clinic. In 2009, clinic volunteers completed a total of 2,426 visits, up more than 16% from the number of visits in 2008. A comparison of visits between the first 6 months of 2009 and January through June of 2010 shows that last year we completed 1,189 visits, whereas during the same period this year we completed 1,458 visits, an increase of almost 23%. In fact, comparison visits over the four full years of free clinic operations show marked increases, and I have included them in my remarks to you. As a result of ongoing growth, the Alliance's Board of Directors has authorized a move to larger quarters. This autumn, we anticipate occupying the former Family and Children's Building at 521 West Seneca Street, effectively doubling the space in which we operate and adding three exam rooms to the number we now have at our disposal. We hope that additional space with ADA accessibility and some security features on the ground floor in a combination residential and commercial part of town will make the prospect of volunteer time at the clinic more attractive to area providers. And if you know any, give them my number. For now, we continue to offer weekly primary care, occupational therapy, acupuncture, chiropractic, and herbal care, with the addition of a once-a-month women's health session and a monthly pre-employment physicals. We are also pleased to sponsor the HIV case management satellite program from Arnott Ogden Medical Center every Thursday. And without us, they would not have local space to provide that program. As is true of all area nonprofits, we struggle to improve our funding, our human resources, and our outreach to those we serve. To this end, we have raised almost $200,000 this year alone, much of which is earmarked for the clinic. We thank the Tompkins County legislators for support of this work in behalf of un- and underinsured New York residents, and we extend an open invitation to visit our new space. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Bethany. Is there anyone else who'd like to address the legislature? All right, legislators. Anyone like to speak? Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two items for you. The first is the never-ending discussion about NYSEG and their rates. The Public Service Commission held hearings recently. You probably saw that in the paper. And unfortunately, as many people that attended the first one as attended the first one did not attend this one. I think it was down from about 100 to something like 30. or approaching 30. However, the message was still the same. People can't afford even the reduced increases that NYSEG has or Iberdrola have brought forward. The comments, as I reported at the last meeting, the comments that I've been making over the last several years, I was assured were entered into the record by Jackie Powers, who is the secretary to the PSC. So I'm still of a mind that Iberdrola has not come across with the maintenance that they had promised would be done, and there needs to be more justification for the rate increases that they're asking for. So while I didn't go to the hearing, I was assured that the comments that I submitted were part of this material by the letter that she sent. Just stay tuned. If it's not too late to submit your own comments if you'd like. I mean, I'd encourage you to do that. Second item, a little later this evening, we're going to be talking about the agricultural industry in Tompkins County and specifically about the equine piece of it. But while I have privilege of the floor, I think it's important to remind you that on August the 14th, is that right, Pat?
Yes.
Farm City Day is taking place at the Baker Farm. It's called the Swale Lake and Farm up on Bostwick Road. And it starts at 11 in the morning, runs till about 4 in the afternoon. And for those of you that have never been to one of these, it's quite nice. I remember a couple of years ago out in Dryden at the Marquis place, we had to eat ice cream faster than you could imagine because it was a day like today. And the kids all got a chuckle out of that. But it's quite nice, and it gives people an opportunity that particularly when we started it at the Ag and Farmland Board a number of years ago, it's to provide an opportunity for people who don't normally come into contact with farm animals to see how your food gets to the table, essentially. And it isn't just going to the grocery store. And Pat is the liaison from the Planning Committee. Could I digress for just a second, Madam Chair? Pat, do you want to add anything to that? Because Pat is my counterpart on the Ag and Farmland Board.
Well, I actually had this item on my list that I was going to announce it. And I think you've pretty well covered it, Frank. I hope that everyone will take the opportunity to go out and experience all the great things that will be there at the Baker Farm on Bostwick Road. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. I think the opportunity for people who spend most of their time in a more urban setting to get out onto an operating farm will provide an experience that is one that you will really enjoy and want to come back to another year.
Do we have an address and a date again, please?
The date is on Saturday the 14th. It begins at 11 o'clock and goes until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's on Bostwick Road. I don't have the exact address with me. The Baker Farm, or otherwise known as the
Swale Lake,
I'm still learning the pronunciation of the name of the farm.
Go up Bostwick, past the county highway facility, and keep going. You will come to it.
There will be signs, and you'll be able to tell. There will be a big crowd.
We usually get an invitation from Cooperative Extension.
And anyone running for state office, this is an absolute command performance to come to. But no names will be mentioned.
Anyone else? Pat.
I actually have another announcement. There's another wonderful event taking place on August 14th. That's out in the town of Lansing at Myers Park. It's our Harbor Fest Day. This is an event that has been going on for about 3 years now and is growing every year. It goes on all day long. There will be wonderful music from various musical groups from around the town and around the county. Good food. There will be a lot of vendors, booths of one kind or another. I certainly welcome you to come out to Myers Park in the town of Lansing. You can get there by boat or you can come by car, either one. but we'd be glad to have you. I'll be spending part of my day there and part of my day up at the Baker Farm. So,
thank you, Pat. Anyone else? Carol, then Dave, then Mike, and Brian? Okay.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that people are get a little bit of an update on some things happening in the city of Ithaca, because I don't see a city representative to talk about this in with more authority than I can. But the plans, the city planning board and the Common Council are considering various approaches in response to the proposal from John Novar to build a very large project along State Street that stretches from Quarry up to Valentine Place and back towards the Gorge. It's a large project, and there are many competing interests at stake. And so regardless of what you feel about the various interests and where you stand on them, I just urge you to look at, there are some new plans that he has submitted to the city. I assume it'll be posted. If it's not already posted on the city website, it will be. But he's come in with a really very significant redesign in response to some of the neighborhood concerns. The project is one that will provide many more units of housing. So if you're concerned about increasing housing units, it speaks to that. It will have some traffic impacts. There are concerns about where this housing should go in relation to the students who will live there. And then the design issues, because it was going to be a very monolithic, massive facing along State Street. And that's the design part that he has really responded to the neighborhood concerns, breaking up the monolithic four-story tall wall, unbroken wall, into buildings along that edge that are more in keeping with the, at least to my mind, in keeping with the character of these freestanding houses along the way. So I just urge you to, if you don't know anything about it, the Ithaca Journal's done some articles. It's on the city website. There's been environmental impact statement, and the final is being worked on now, and there's still probably is a chance to comment. So thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Dave?
Yeah, I'd just like to invite everybody to stop up this evening to Newfield to night out. Started at 5 o'clock. There'll be a lot of festivities there, and everybody's welcome. So please come on down.
Thank you. That's, there are events in the city as well. We've got Mike, and then if somebody wants to talk about the city events, that'd be great.
Well, the 14th is pretty popular, so after you go to Farm City Day and then go over to Myers Park, then you come to Dryden to the Dryden Lake Festival. And that starts at 2 o'clock, so, and that's going to go through dark when there'll be fireworks over the lake. So come on out for music, fun, good food, and fun. There'll be some canoe races. I understand that the chair of this legislature may be paddling in as part of the canoe race, so you may want to see that. We hope she has her life belt on, and as does everybody. So it'll be some fun. I can't say much more about the state legislature. It's just just beyond comment where we are. I guess we're only, what, today's the 3rd. We're only 8 days away from the record of failure to have a budget.
I think you'll hear later, we might prefer they didn't actually pass anything. So to what it seems they have passed. So thank you, Mike. Now, I did see somebody else's hand when I thought it was Brian. Well, is there anybody else? Kathy?
Thank you. I want to start out by just saying how pleased I am with our president for getting a federal injunction against the portions of SB 1070, the Arizona law that would have required law enforcement agencies to engage in unconstitutional racial profiling. My hope is that the 14 states that were reportedly looking into similar laws are discouraged by this action on behalf of our federal government, which courageously integrated the armed forces and did some other things with regard to civil rights along the way, even sometimes when our country was vocal, some minorities in fact were vocal about not wanting to do what was just and right. And by minorities, I mean political minorities. I have a happy thing. That is, some of y'all have commented on seeing my button about asking me about women swimming. Well, it turns out that Saturday morning, the 14th, for the intrepid souls that are going to get up in time for a 6 a.m. Trek across the lake, you can ride across, you can go to the Ithaca Yacht Club on a shuttle bus after catching, after parking at Cass Park to support your local swimmer. And I know a lot of y'all have been supporting swimmers for years. This year I was just fortunate enough to sign up to be a swimmer. I wanted to do it because of my knee surgery. And I tell you what, I found a community and an event that is just so nurturing and is an amazing event for a terrific cause. HospiCare is our local resource for hospice and palliative care. And this fundraiser is an amazing event. There's boaters, there's contributions from all over the community. As a matter of fact, I will say this now. Anybody that wants to contribute on my behalf, I will buy your breakfast. If you want to come out, 6 o'clock you can do breakfast and you can do all those other events. I'd be happy to do it. And I also want to say that I think it's great for people that are supporting other swimmers and have done so for years. You can look them up, womenswimming.org, and just keep the search line empty and go down the list and you'll see boaters and swimmers from all walks of life that are supporting this terrific organization and taking part in this tremendous fundraiser. I'm just thrilled to be able to take part this year. And yes, I have pledge forms for my colleagues. I'll show you later.
Thank you, Kathy. Leslie?
I just want to caution Kathy to be careful with all the ethics complaints against some of her elected representatives. Don't be bribing people in the open.
That was a bribe. Oh, geez, I didn't even think of it that way.
Breakfast at 6 o'clock is a bribe for me. I want to just take 2 seconds to get on my soapbox about National Night Out. Yes, it is happening in the city of Ithaca as well, Titus Towers and Conway Park. But I participate in a group called Safe Communities, and so does Martha, just talking about the safety of our community and what we expect from our community, from residents, from neighborly behavior, but taking care of each other. And it's just a reminder to folks the whole what National Night Out was all about. And we ask people to just get out and just be reminded that we are there to try to make sure that our remind people that our communities need to be safe for all of us. So it's not just a party. I think sometimes it's turned into the end. It's more about recognizing that we can look out for each other, that we can try to be safe in our community, that we can make sure that we let people know that we are not accepting behaviors in our neighborhoods, in our community, that is, I'm not going to say this word right, I'm just going to say dangerous to our health. So just as a reminder, turn on your porch lights, let your neighbors know who you are, and let's get back to what National Night Out was all about. So I'm glad to hear it's happening in Newfield every year and in the city of Ithaca. But a reminder to folks of what it's all about. So thank you, and thanks to our law enforcement community for making it happen as well.
Thank you, Leslie. Anyone else? All right, thank you. I don't see any municipal official back there. So Lisa Holmes, our director of the Office for the Aging, has a presentation tonight. And you're going to make it happen from back there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, good. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me. We tested this out less than an hour ago, and it worked. So
let's see.
So far, so good.
All right. So and you have in your folders.
Yes.
Version of the slides.
Yes, copy of the PowerPoint and then another handout called the Elder Economic Security Index, mm-hmm. and I'll talk about that at the end. Great, so here it is. So I have 10 minutes. I'm just going to briefly talk about our program, give an overview and talk about some trends and issues and wrap up with this economic security index 10 minutes or less. Okay. So just to begin, the mission of the Office for the Aging is to assist the senior population of Tompkins County remaining at home and independent for as long as appropriate and possible and with a decent quality of life and human dignity. That's what we're all about. And we do that with a number of supportive programs and services to assist keeping people in their homes. Being that you all have those shiny new program inventories, I won't go into great detail about all of our programs, but I do want to spend some time on this first slide here. So just to state that the Office for the Aging is the county's main source of information about the issues affecting older adults and the array of programs and services that are available to assist them. And we provide, for instance, resource guides and listings about all of the various senior housing options, apartments, assisted living, nursing homes. And we have those available in hard copy and on our website. We assist individuals with what can be a maze of long-term care options and the system that's out there. And we are trusted in the community for being objective and unbiased with our information. We don't have a stake in promoting one provider over another or making a profit. We just want to get the right information out there to individuals to make informed choices about their care. We not only serve older adults, but we serve family members, however one defines oneself as, you know, as family, as caregivers. And we recognize that over 80% of the care in this country is provided by spouses, partners, family, and friends. And there is federal, state, and county funding that goes to programming to support caregivers. We support them through various training sessions, support groups, a lending library with information about specific conditions such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. And we have staff who are experienced with years of training to assist caregivers. We also provide the Personal Emergency Response Program, medical alert machines that provide direct connections with the 911 center for people at risk of falling or other medical emergencies. And these units are offered on a sliding fee scale. And for many individuals who have fallen or have had emergencies, they've been real lifesavers. And we do know that falls were the top reason for emergency medical calls in Tompkins County in 2009 at our 911 center. So that underscores the importance of this program. Another lifesaver we know about is the FoodNet Meals on Wheels program, providing over 500 hot noontime meals to seniors throughout the county. FoodNet's our largest subcontractor. So they provide not only Meals on Wheels, but congregate meals at four sites: at Titus Towers downtown, at Woods Edge in Lansing, Center Village Court in Groton, and at Trumansburg at the First Baptist Church every day. We also operate the ICEP Home Care Program in partnership with the Department of Social Services, and this program serves frail individuals with non-medical in-home care to help meet their daily needs. And most of the individuals on the ICEP program are functionally eligible for nursing home care. And we know that every day that we can care for someone in these situations with these services in their homes, we're helping them to maintain their dignity and independence and maintaining their quality of life and hopefully delaying or even preventing nursing home placement altogether. So cost savings as well. So that's that. Here are some other programs that we offer directly. I just want to note that many of our programs utilize the help of volunteers to assist elders and to further extend our reach into the community. The Project Care program has from 60 to 80 volunteers who provide regular visits to homebound or isolated seniors in the community. The Ombudsman program is a highly specialized program which trains and certifies volunteers to act as advocates for nursing home residents. And the Health Insurance Counseling Program is another highly specialized program where volunteers assist seniors with Medicare claims, private insurance, Medicare Advantage, Medicaid, Medigap, Medicare D, EPIC, you get the picture. We rely heavily on volunteers for all of these programs, and again, if anyone is interested or in volunteer opportunities, please feel free to give me a call. And then in addition, our other programs here, I'll just mention home energy assistance, weatherization referral, Title V employment program, and the College for Lifelong Learning, all of which are written in great detail on those program inventory sheets. And this here is a list of more services that we provide through contracts with many other community agencies. I just want to state that all of our programs, large and small, work together to support older adults living at home safely and independently. So there's a real network, and many times one person can avail themselves of several of these programs. In terms of some new initiatives that we're involved with, these first two are federal grants, the Community Living Program grant, and Aging and Disability Resource Center grant. Again, Tompkins County was selected by the State Office for the Aging as a local partner for both of these grants. We're finishing up the first year of these grants and heading into the second year. And additionally, along with several other local agencies, we are applying for a fall prevention grant with the Community Health Foundation of Western and Central New York. That application is pending, but if accepted, that we will be doing some innovative and evidence-based programming for fall prevention for seniors. We know that, again, that's a big issue that leads to a lot of other health events. Wouldn't be the Office for the Aging if I didn't show these slides, the demographic trends. I know you've seen these before, but next year in 2011, the oldest of the baby boomers will be turning 65. So that's going to be significant. And we also know that they're smaller in number, but the fastest growing segment of the aging population are those 85 and older, and those are the individuals who are most in need of long-term care in general. So, and we'll be interested to see with the census data coming out in the future how these numbers will change and affect us in Tompkins County. These are based on the 2000 census. Okay, just some pressure points in general, or just some other factoids for you. In 2009, our office and the programs of our office and the programs that we subcontract, we served approximately 5,500 seniors in 2009. We served 689 individuals through our personal emergency response program. I point that out because it's an all-time high for us. We have 29 individuals on a waiting list for home care services through the ICEP program. That is also, unfortunately, a high for us. And the average wait time is 6 months for that program. So that is not a good thing. We also know that for the people who are currently served through the ICEP program, they could use even more service than they're currently getting, because we have a finite number of dollars. We do try to cap the number of hours that people receive, and current clients could use more. And then finally, the field of Medicare and Medicare counseling is becoming increasingly complex, and we expect that with the federal health reform, there will be even more questions. We know there've been some changes there, some changes with the state EPIC program. Every one of those changes means more calls for our office. And then finally, the last thing I wanted to bring your attention to is the other piece of information in your handout, and that's this Elder Economic Security Standard Index for New York. This was recently published by Statewide Senior Action in conjunction with University of Massachusetts. And I thought as our county governing body, you'd be interested in this information. It's a tool at looking for economic security that has a bit more depth and meaning than the federal poverty guidelines, because it's taking additional factors into account. And they have done this research from county to county across New York State so that they have information specific to Tompkins County. And if you're interested in the full report and all of the source data, it's available at the Statewide Senior Action website, and I have it in my office as well. Broken down here, the cost of living per year in Tompkins County for a single person age 65 or older without a mortgage and in good health, so this is kind of the best case scenario, is approximated to be about $19,812. And they figured that the average Social Security benefit for an individual in Tompkins County is about $15,000. So you see there is a gap there. It's also estimated that one in four individuals over the age of 65 rely on Social Security as their sole source of income. So they're approximating here that for one in four individuals, this will be a problem. And it also underscores the importance and necessity for the service and programs that address some of these needs and help to meet this gap. One more slide about this. Through these studies and the Statewide Senior Action, this slide is then showing, the previous slide was assuming that the individual was in good health, and this slide is factoring in the cost of long-term care, which we know Medicare does not pay for long-term care. In general, it's paid for out of pocket, or if you have lucky enough to have long-term care insurance or Medicaid. But for instance, if you have a low need for long-term care, 6 hours per week, the annual cost adds to $7,608 per year. So you see, as you go across, the gap increases between the average Social Security benefit of an individual and then their household costs with long-term care. So all of this to say, this is the situation faced by many individuals over the age of 65 in Tompkins County, and I wanted you to just to have this information and to be aware of what was published specific to Tompkins County on this issue. If you have any questions, feel free to let me know. On that note, I think that's the end of my comments.
Thank you very much, Lisa. Any questions? Leslie?
Lisa, could you say again what percentage or number of elders in Tompkins County have Social Security as their sole source of income? I missed what you said.
One in four, 25%. And the majority of those, generally women.
Thank you.
Generally or what?
Women.
Oh.
And that's not specific to Tompkins County. I think that's across the state. That's just kind of the general statistic.
That's a really stunning number. Pam, and then Peter, and then Carol.
Well, I guess I just these statistics that Lisa has shown us really emphasize the basic importance of Social Security to our system and Medicare to the health and survival of many people. I think this year, I believe Medicare is celebrating its 45th anniversary. And if without Medicare, there would have been many senior citizens who would have either died or have lived in a reduced quality of life because of poor health. And it is a system that is fundamental to the well-being of our senior citizens. And just to add to that, I think that the Social Security, both of these funds are constantly being talked about, changing the structure. the Social Security, I think these figures that, that Lisa was just providing us on one in four people, this is the only source of income for 25% of our senior citizens. And this fund that we have been told is in danger, the fact is that that fund has been raided for years and years and years, that there is nothing wrong with the fund except for a government that doesn't seem to be able to keep its hands out of this kind of basic security for our senior citizens. So I think we need to be outraged that at any move to change that system. And I'm sorry to get on the soapbox in the middle of your presentation, but it's something that just really infuriates me. Thank you.
Join you on that soapbox.
Thank you, Pam. Peter, I think Peter was next.
Yeah, Lisa, there was something that stuck out and that caught my attention in your slide that I could not understand the explanation for, namely that big difference between the medium elderly and the elderly, the growth of those two categories. And the one category sort of peaked in the near future and then looked like it was flat or even falling, and the other one had a big burst of energy, the 85-year-old. That one there. Is that somehow due to better health care? People are living longer or what?
I'm guessing that since that will be when the baby boomers hit that cohort of 85 plus.
Oh, of course, yes, yeah, okay. Thank you.
Sure. Carol and then Mike.
For those of you interested in the free breakfasts, I just want to tell you that my stint on the COFA board, I encourage you all to go to COFA board meetings once in a while. Not only do they serve beautiful little muffins, but tea in real teacups with saucers. So say hello to everybody for me there and whoever followed me. It's a treat. I have a question about... not that we have the wherewithal to do anything in new programs, but I still believe that there is a need, a transportation need, that nobody is meeting for people who are not quite ready to give up ownership of a car of some sort, are not quite ready to need gadabout or to rely only on taxis, but want to still have some control over transportation. And I don't think that the public sector would need to own the car to help figure out some way in which groups of people could share cars that they no longer need every day, but still feel they had some ownership, almost an Ithaca car share, but with a driver that came with it. Not only could there be groups, but maybe some young person who can't afford a car could be the driver and could take that car home at night. So, you know, it's a public safety issue because it means that it would keep people off the roads who really shouldn't be driving but aren't ready to give it up. So anything that you can do in the future in those lines, if there are ever opportunities that you see, I'd be interested in hearing more about them. Thanks.
Can I respond? I'm glad you mentioned that because there is a coordinated human service transportation planning group that, through the county, Dwight Mengel, and coming up in a couple of weeks in August, we are going to be having a phone conference with the individual who created this innovative senior transportation network in Maine. It's called ITN America. And it is similar to what you're describing. It's a different way of providing transportation where individuals who are contemplating giving up their cars, but they can still drive, may time bank, may volunteer to drive individuals who have given up their cars, and the individuals who made the decision can donate their car to this kind of organization and then receive credit for rides back in their car. And it works very beautifully in the communities that have done it, and it's being looked at here locally.
So. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's great. Thanks, Lisa. Mike?
Lisa, I like the the chart you had about income for the elderly. I too think that the Social Security may be a little optimistic in, by showing that average. We have a lot of people in Tompkins County who are high-end earners and have maxed out their Social Security benefits, which I think is skewing it. We have an awful lot of folks out there who don't earn that kind of payment on their Social Security and who were hurt this year when not only did was there no cost of living increase, but the Medicare premium went up, so they actually got less money in their check than they had the year before. And these are people getting $500 a month or $600 or $700 a month. Hopefully they have two Social Securities, husband and wife, but when one of those spouses die, it just impoverishes and humiliates the survivor.
Lisa, could you talk a little bit? I know there are some, under the health care reform law, there are some changes that have already taken effect. Could you talk about the, how any of those that might affect seniors?
Yeah, currently, in the current year, there's this first phase of eliminating what's called the donut hole or the coverage gap for Medicare Part D. So, first of all, individuals who have Medicare Part D prescription drug coverage, when they reach the so-called coverage gap and they have to pay the full cost of the prescriptions, they will automatically receive a $250 rebate check in the mail. They don't have to do anything. And this is another point to bring across here is that this kind of opens the door for fraudulent activity where people could be calling up and asking for information, saying, have you received your check? Give me your Social Security number. People should not do that. Just know that if you're on Medicare D, you reach the coverage gap, you'll automatically be receiving the check. And that's the first phase of what's gradually going to eliminate that coverage gap. So that's the one thing this year.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anyone else? Frank?
Just an aside, since Lisa mentioned, and we've been talking about Social Security, one of the changes that came about recently, which some of us that got our cards a long time ago still have a card that says not to be used for identification.
Yes.
And also the fact that this is a two-parter. The newer cards have removed that little tidbit. And we were always coached that you should guard your Social Security number very closely because obviously it would lead into a lot of other things. And it was an interesting change that the previous administration had approved, which really was a puzzle. The second is the proliferation of using your Social Security number for almost any kind of identification. Even if you have a credit card, if you call in to get a balance on your credit card, often they ask you for the last four of your Social Security and often the whole Social Security number. So it would be good. I know we're still participating in Senior Circle. Yeah. It really would be good to keep alerting seniors not to give that number out under any circumstances. And if there's any way to get the feds to go back to not using it for identification purposes, would even be better. Mm-hmm. Because it's really exposing a lot of people unnecessarily.
Absolutely.
The other one, which is going to be a little sensitive, is that I know that earlier this evening we were speaking about the situation in Arizona. One of the items that crossed my desk was concern about some of the illegal aliens were receiving Social Security benefits. And I don't, you don't know whether what you read on the internet is true or not. And it's something that's worth researching. But if individuals indeed are illegal and they're getting Social Security benefits, that seems like the people who are legitimately entitled as the ones you've described tonight, and they're going to be hurting even more as that curve goes up even higher. That's an area that I would hope in this delay out there gets examined a little more closely. That's a political statement too, Pam. Sorry.
Isn't it true that anyone who works and gets a paycheck pays into Social Security, regardless of your citizenship status, and then
that's one of the concerns, Martha. Some of these people have not paid in, and that's what in this write-up was revealed.
All right, we're going to not require Lisa to answer that one at all. So, is there anything, Jim?
Lisa, really great presentation. I love the length of it and the conciseness of it.
Yes, thank you very much. And the income information is great. It's great to have the Tompkins County specific income information. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. For my report, I have a couple of things. You all have received the NYSAC program for September 15th to 17th, and people have asked me, you know, who's going to go and how many people. What I'd really like to ask you to do is look through the program, look at your own calendar, and let me or Karen know whether you want to go and for which days. And I'll, you know, we'll collect all that information and see. We have about $2,200 and a little more in the legislature's budget to reimburse us for those kinds of expenses. So I'd first like to see who is interested in going, and then we'll see how far the money can spread in terms of covering the cost and see whether there's any flexibility. But first, we need to know who's interested in going. And Karen tells me that there's a deadline for when you sign up for the hotel. She always looks for nearby hotels that are less expensive, but in this case, there's nothing very nearby at all. So we're really going to try to get into the conference hotel, unfortunately, but that's really the most practical alternative. If you could please let Karen or me know by next Tuesday, that's the 10th, then she and I can work this out in time for that deadline. Jim.
It's a sort of cynical comment, but I think there, if we're going to spend money to go to a conference and the legislature still not passed the budget, I think every member of NYSAC should go to Albany and stand outside the Assembly and Senate chambers. That should be the conference if they don't have a budget yet.
Here.
Okay. Well, this one's set for Buffalo, so, I agree. A couple of other items. Next Thursday, August 12th, as I discussed in the with a couple of you, the EPA is holding a day-long series of hearings on the effects of water of hydraulic fracturing on water resources. So a number of us, I think, are going down. Sarah Hess is working on carpooling and sort of making sure there's some buses, perhaps. So and there are going to be a couple of rallies, actually, with speakers. And so let me know if you're interested in going, and I'll kind of get anybody in touch. Carol?
Yeah, I'm going in a car, so if people are interested in carpooling in our car. I also have a statement that I'm carrying with me from the Water Resources Council to read and submit there as well. And if there are other bodies that you are on or represent and want me to bring those down, I'm happy to.
That's right. So, comments can also be submitted electronically on the EPA website. If you're interested in doing that, I'm happy to show you where to go and how to send those in if you can't go on the 12th. I would like to let you know that Joe has been nominated to the by NYSAC to be considered for appointment by the governor as a member of the Indigent Defense. Oh, what's the title? Board, the Indigent Defense Board. That is a new board that's being formed to look at the defense of poor people in New York. NYSAC gets to make four nominations, and the governor will pick two. So I sent a letter in, for whatever it's worth, to Hal McCabe and said that Kevin McCabe. All the McCabe brothers, okay. The governor's representative, and said that we had reasons to, there are a lot of reasons that Joe would be excellent on that board. So I hope that we add one more thing for him to do. Speaking of something else to do, there was a NYSAC President Santulli has convened a commission on the state takeover of the administration of Medicaid, something I think we all have an interest in, and I volunteered to be on the board. And in the minutes, there's a – I mentioned it last meeting, and the minutes say that I was chosen for that board. Well, as of two weeks ago, I wasn't chosen, but as of yesterday, I was. So the minutes aren't quite accurate, but we'll get to that later in the meeting. Anyway, I will be on that board. Their meeting, first meeting is August 10th, and it's going to be very interesting. My part is going to be to kick and scream. So there are other people on the board, commissioners of social services, finance people, a number of elected officials from across the state, and I think we're going to be looking, and we'll be looking at the whole issue of Medicaid, and it's just a huge issue for all of us, as we know. The Tompkins County Council of Governments, just a quick item. We've been talking for some time about having a group of municipalities work together on cell tower siting and hiring a legal firm to help us figure out what the jurisdiction is, what kind of opportunities we might have to work together as municipalities. We're putting that together. A firm was chosen, and I'm actually writing the resolution that we'll bring through our committee structure, and then have other municipalities also look at to share. The total cost is about $10,000-$11,000. It would be written as a no greater than $1,500 expense for each municipality. We don't know the exact number because we're not sure how many municipalities will take part. But I wanted to just let you know that will be coming. I wanted to thank all of you and the department heads for the great work you're doing with the program inventories. And I've been to a number of committee meetings where you've all been sort of working your way through those. HHS gets the gold star for taking two full meetings to look at all their pages of program inventories. It's a great resource. I've gotten feedback from the public that they've appreciated it. They thought it was a real addition to public information. I know that the department heads and Joe and Kevin worked many, many hours on these. And so I appreciate that work, but also the work of all of you in going through those. And finally, last meeting, we talked about the Dragon Boat Festival and how much fun it was and what a surprise it was to win the first race we were in, et cetera. And unfortunately, Karen wasn't here. So I wasn't able to give her the small token to thank her for all the work she did to get us registered, to recruit everybody, to collect the money, and get the waivers, and then run the team when we got there. So, Karen, thank you very, very much. Thank you. It's a Dragon Boat T-shirt, of course. really, it was a lot of fun, and maybe we'll do it again next year. So. That's my report. Are there any questions? Okay. County Administrator. Brian, sorry.
Just real quickly, you got me wondering, because we just heard about that yesterday, office that Joe was being nominated for is the Office of Indigent Legal Services. I knew there was something more technical. And Joe, if you don't want to be on that, we can write other kinds of letters for you, so that you don't have to. That'll be great if you do get on that.
I think it will be. And it's a small board, 15 members or something.
Small. Yeah. Of course, now if I don't get it, I'm going to, the world will know. I wasn't one of the chosen two.
But really, they'll be setting policy. They'll be really craft, the state is going in a new direction on this program, and it's an important position. Thanks, Brian. Joe.
Thanks, Martha. Just a few items in my report tonight. A few of you have talked about the state budget. Just to give you a quick update, within the last couple of days, the idea of a property tax cap has reemerged. and the buzz began very seriously, I think it was yesterday, I'm losing track of time, yesterday, about both houses of the legislature warming up to the idea of a property tax cap. Martha and I kind of split the phone calls. We did reach out to our local legislators to let them know that that would have pretty catastrophic effects on counties. In fact, all local governments and school districts would be subject to this cap. And we tried to let them know the effect it would have on us, particularly as we're looking, and I think you're familiar with all these numbers, we're looking at a pension increase alone that would push our levy up by 4%. Just that one item would push our property tax levy up by 4%. The way this cap has been described, it's often been described as a 4% cap on how much you can increase your levy. That's not true. 4% is the maximum amount you can raise your levy. The actual cap is the lesser of 4% or 20% more than CPI. I just checked before I came over. Right now, June to June, CPI is running at 1.1%. So our limit would be, if inflation stays where it is, 1.32% next year. Now, I've looked at the numbers. The budget is now in my hands. The departmental requests are in my hands right now. And I know the effect of the budget as we currently structured it, which is a 5% levy target, and the rest of it made up by reductions in spending. And I know how significant the cuts are going to be, just to make that. And the thought of trying to make up another, it equates to about $1.5 million of cuts if this cap holds. I hate to drift to hyperbole, but it's pretty catastrophic. It would add another 4% or so to the cuts that we would have to make to non-mandated spending on top of the 7% cut that's already out there. So we've done our best to alert policymakers in Albany. NYSAC sent out a letter today. I think all of you have a copy of it. The intent was to discourage the legislature from taking this action. Now, I will tell you, and the reason I've been punching on a little machine here, it's not to text my wife or anything. I've been trying to find out what's happening in Albany right now. I do know the Senate approved the cap by a vote of 51-8 late this afternoon. But I also understand that the Assembly adjourned without taking up the bill. What I'm trying to figure out is whether that means it's just not going to happen this year, as I hope. Or they've just kind of gone home and we'll bring it back again in the near term. But it's a real serious concern, and we've done, I think, what we can do to let people know what bad policy that would be. The budget is, again, our own budget is with me right now. Kevin and I are working through everything that we've been given. There are some very difficult decisions that are going to have to be made, and I know I say this every time we get together. But as I look now at specific OTR requests and cuts that are in here, I have to reinforce the fact it's going to be a very difficult year with some very tough choices that we're going to have to make. And I will try to keep people posted on progress as we go along. That budget will come to you, I think, on September 7th. As a part of kind of the gearing up for the budget, I really do appreciate what you've done to look through those program assessment forms. This is brand new. It's a lot of information. I think it's good information. Where we are right now is just kind of familiarizing ourselves with those programs, and as time goes on and as decisions get closer, I hope it'll prove to be a good resource for you in terms of how we allocate our dollars. Like Martha, I've heard from some people from the public, it hasn't been a wave of reaction, but what I've heard is good, and people appreciate the fact that we're trying to explain what it is that we do with their money and the value it has. So I appreciate that and the work that department heads did on that. Last item on my list, the easiest item, we are going to be conducting an auction of the items, equipment, and furniture items that are in the Biggs property that weren't either brought over to the new Brown Road headquarters or claimed by other departments or not-for-profits. Keep posted on our webpage and in the Penny Saver on the date. We're still trying to work a date in, but it'll be in the next couple of weeks. And if anybody's interested in desks, file cabinets, and things like that, there are several of them that we will be putting on the auction block within the next couple of weeks. So that's my report.
Thank you, Joe. Jim,
question,
Peter.
Joe. The auction, do other governments who are seeking like chairs and tables, would they have to go to the auction?
No.
Okay.
Mike.
Joe, on the report on the tax cap that Albany's talking about, I think I know the answer to this, but I really would like it if you would underscore what the tax cap does to close the New York State budget gap.
that's a great question, and that's the easiest answer. Right? It does nothing.
So they're making a lot of noise, hurting counties, towns, villages, and cities, but doing nothing to close the state budget gap that they've been out there since April trying to figure out a way to close.
Because there's no mandate relief. That's the point, is that there's, you know, if they would take over, let's say, Medicaid, which is by itself 29% of our tax levy, then we could talk about a cap. You know, we'd certainly be reducing obviously we'd be reducing taxes a lot if we didn't pay for Medicaid, like most of the other states. I mean, this is stunning. Do you happen to know whether Jim Seward, Senator Seward, voted?
I don't have the vote count. I don't have the individual votes yet, no.
Because he told me yesterday he thought it was not acceptable without mandate relief. Peter and then Frank.
I grew up in Boston during the lean years of the Red Sox, and when my buddies and I hung around, one thing we always said was, wait till next year. But, you know, next year came and it was always worse than this year. With regard to the property cap, I happened to look at my email last night and I got a message from the Democratic nominee for governor, who in all likelihood will be the next governor, saying what he was going to do for property taxes. And what he's going to do is put a cap on it of 2% or the CPI, whichever is smaller, and with no limitation on mandates. So I just pass that on. Wait till next year.
Is it too late to announce?
Frank?
Thanks, Martha. Picking up on Peter's last comment, the Yogi also said, it isn't over till it's over, right? So, but the remember what happened in California when they put a property tax cap on the California, if there's any state that's in worse financial shape than we are, it's California.
Illinois.
Well, Illinois is running a close second. Anyway, what I wanted to ask is the that's an argument against putting the cap on because it really hamstrings anything else we can do at any level. Any update on Schumer's and Gillibrand's proposal for the six-month extension on FMAP?
I'm watching things as they go. It looks like they're not going to do anything today. It's not looking very good. That's the last I got off the
Okay, so
my emails.
If that more bad news, if that is not passed, how does that affect the? We're looking at a 7% reduction in spending for us, which we haven't talked about the mortgage tax. At least you were kind enough not to mention it tonight. But now we may be faced with this FMAP hit too.
Well. You know, we've dealt, I think, intelligently with the FMAP. We've never put it into our operating budget. We've never assumed that one-time money is going to be used or should be used for ongoing expenses. So as we set up 2011, we said we're going to use it the same way in 2011 as we are in 2010. It's a hedge against unanticipated events like cuts in state aid and things like that. And from the very beginning, that's the way we've used our FMAP money, our stimulus money. It got us through that awful year in 2009. We got $1.8 million, and that helped us phase ourselves into this different environment. So we're one of, I think, we're in better shape than many counties, and certainly the state of New York, that did put this into their operating budget. And now if it doesn't come, it makes a difficult situation even tougher. With respect to the mortgage tax, there's really no update on that. I'm not feeling very good at all, given the flurry of things going on in Albany. I'm not feeling good about the prospects of getting it approved quickly and in time to put into our 2011 budget. And I'm trying to look at ways that we can avoid imposing additional cuts in non-mandated expenditures on our departments because of the loss of revenue. So we're, David Squires and I have spent time looking at sales tax estimates. With the consortium plan that's before you tonight, we might be able to reduce that estimate a little bit. So we're really trying hard to offset that loss through some other things without going back to the well again and asking departments to go from a 7% cut to a 10% cut.
And then if this property tax cap, when would this go into effect?
It's my belief that it would go into effect in 2011.
Let's be clear. The pension increases alone are 4% on our property tax levy.
That's correct, yep.
Medicaid, the increase that we annually do on Medicaid is another 1%.
That's right.
So there's 5% on our levy right there. If this cap, if it goes into effect at something under 2%, then we have to lop out, I don't know, $3.5 million just to cover Medicaid and pensions, right? The increase in Medicaid and pensions.
Yeah, something like that.
Chrissy, you taking notes? Jim, did you have your hand up? I mean, this is without mandate relief, this is hypocrisy. That's all it is. They're beating their chest about how they're going to keep your taxes down. And I don't understand it at all. Jim, didn't you have your hand? No? Did you want to
no,
add?
No, Martha, you're saying all.
Okay. Carol.
I have a question about whether anybody is talking about the revenue side at the state level and the fact that the wealthiest 1% of taxpayers in New York pay a much smaller percentage of their incomes to taxes than the bottom 20%. They pay something like 40% less in taxes, and it's the chart kind of makes a big, almost a straight line, not quite. It's a little bit of a U down. It's the top, the very top 1% pay less than the next 5% who pay a little less than the middle, and then it just only goes down slightly for the bottom 20%. Is anybody talking about doing anything?
No, I'm not aware of any discussion about broad-based tax changes right now. It's all the specialty taxes on sugary drinks and cigarettes and so forth.
In fact, I saw an email that went by that said that the tax they were considering on out-of-state hedge fund managers, who really need a lot of help, they've removed that from the plan because they don't want them to move outside of New York. So there was, supposed to be a small increase for those folks. Pam, really?
I am the buzzkill.
Since we're getting really, I'm getting emotional too, and upset. I mean, first off, I mean, there used to be in the '80s, you used to be able to tax the richest New Yorkers 15%, right? If we had that 15%, we'd have $20 to $30 billion a year, and that would well close our gap. That would provide property tax relief. Now it's less than 7%. It's ridiculous. Or it's about 7%,
actually.
6.8. So it is less than 7%. I mean, what they are doing right now, I'm going to probably regret this, but I don't care. I mean, it's a bait and switch. It's what scam artists do. It's absolutely what scam artists do. And I think this New York State Senate should be ashamed of itself. And I hope that our Democratic choice for governor rethinks his platform. I mean, his pledge, if he continues with that, it is utterly irresponsible and utterly out of touch.
Absolutely.
I agree. I feel like I should climb up on the table and say,
well, I just want to say that I agree with what Nathan is saying, and I've spent a lot of time in the last couple of months going out and talking to people all throughout this area of the state, and this just confirms what they all are saying and thinking, that our government is out of touch, that it has no concept of what is the impact of what their actions are having on people's lives, that it is a government that is detached, and this is just a more of an example. It is just over. I mean, it's just unbelievable that at this point in the game that they would even consider this kind of cap. And I don't understand. I mean, I guess I was talking to people about Albany and how the legislature functions. Is that there's sort of this history of one house passing something and the other house not passing it, so that one house can say, "Well, I tried," and they end up trying. You know, they don't pass. They don't act quite as stupidly as they possibly can, but. It is a game, and it is a terrible game. If that is the case, it's even worse. I mean, it is irresponsible and is not getting to the fundamental problem that we are facing in this state. It is just going to make it worse. If you starve the counties and your local municipalities, if you wipe out the safety net, we are just in an even bigger mess than we are right now. And I think that people are at the ends of their rope. I think that they are not going to put up with this much longer. I think that there is the mood out there. I think we've seen one group organizing, the Tea Partiers, but there are a whole bunch of other people who are just they don't know where to go. And I think we are in danger in our country right now in terms of where we're going. I feel like we really, someone has got to grab a hold of this and make this change.
Thank you, Pam. Carol, you asked, is anybody talking about it? Barbara Lifton is.
Yeah.
Our Assemblywoman is maybe the only one I've heard talking about real tax reform. Not just cutting taxes, because that's a real cheap, easy thing to do. And especially making somebody else cut taxes is the easiest thing in the world.
Well, everybody passes the buck, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And no one takes responsibility.
That's right.
Joe, you got anything else for us?
Oh, that's all.
Shall we all get in our cars right now? Okay. Thank you. I wish I could say, I expect it'll get better. But Jonathan.
I'm going with no report.
Well, I actually have a question.
Sure.
On your in our correspondence, there's a notice about a lien with the health department, and can you explain what's happening with the health department?
I can.
The tile?
There's been more than one lien, so I'm not sure which particular lien.
Maybe just that just reminded me that people should know.
Yeah, I will update on what's happened with the health department. As you may recall, there were problems with the flooring at the health department, which prevented the health department from moving into the building. After several unsuccessful attempts to deal with the general contractor, the subcontractor, and the company which makes the actual flooring, after many unsuccessful attempts to get them to repair the flooring to our satisfaction, we decided that we were going to hire a company and do it ourselves, which we did, and very successfully. The floor now is great. And we have not paid the general contractor a certain amount to deduct for the cost of the flooring. This, of course, does not make the general contractor happy, nor the subcontractor happy, nor the provider of the flooring happy, and they are busy filing liens. And if we don't work it out, they'll end up suing us, and that's what'll happen. But we're in the building, and the flooring is good, and the burden is on them because we hold the money.
And we went through a lot of due diligence, had the tile tested, and there was a lot of documentation supporting our position. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any real question amongst the contractor, the sub, and the company which provides the flooring that the flooring was bad. the issue is whose fault it is that, you know, that they're at, is whose fault it is that the flooring is bad, and which of them should be responsible, and we cannot wait, or we'd be still waiting and waiting forever for them to resolve that issue, and we had to go ahead and resolve it ourselves.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions? Kathy?
This is not related specifically to that issue, but it has to do with geese over in the area of Brown Road. I was over there the other day, and there was an individual shooting geese. Is there some sort of a contract for geese removal, or am I just succumbing to rumor?
Well, there is a plan of geese removal, which Cornell does. I don't know whether they subcontract it out. I think they do. But as I understand it, actually, I talked with some people in the health department who had actually watched it this week.
I watched it too.
Where I believe they brought in a bunch of dogs, but I'm not sure how. But there is a company or a group which is responsible for clearing the area of geese, and they do that regularly. And I believe that it is not supposed to kill the geese.
So are we paying for that as occupants of that area?
No, we don't pay anything separately, but it's part of the our lease agreement that Cornell would take care of it, so it's a Cornell responsibility.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Pam?
Well, there's also a new program, I believe it's for the whole state, reducing the goose population because of the danger to airplanes. And so,
I heard something about that too. Okay. All right, we have no finance director tonight. It's probably a good thing. Any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Okay, the consent agenda is pretty trim. Resolution A, if there's any reason to take it off, please let me know. Authorization to accept an award of a grant from the 6th Judicial District of the New York State Unified Court System. And we have three appointments. Lee Dillon to the Workforce Investment Board, Jane Powers to the Youth Services Board, and Tom Parsons to the Emergency Communications Review and Oversight Committee. Is that a motion for the... Kathy moves the consent agenda. Carol seconds. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Those pass. All right. We're on to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
WAC was supposed to meet last Wednesday, and I'm going to take this opportunity to remind everyone that the fourth Wednesday of the month is when WDIC meets. We did not meet because, once again, we were... Another meeting was scheduled, a meeting for HHS. This is not the first time that we've had meetings scheduled against WDIC that takes a number of the members and participants of WDIC away, because those other meetings are just as important. It is on our calendar as a meeting date and time. It's been there, and I really want to ask my colleagues to please respect that and not schedule things against WDIC. That's all I can ask. So there were a whopping three of us there, and we really did not have a meeting.
Sorry about that, Leslyn. I know that was one of those special HHS meetings, but I understand and appreciate.
No, it's not just HHS. There's been others in the past that have been scheduled against WDIC, and people have to decide which one they're going to go to.
Yeah. Right. I understand. That's not good. All right, thank you very much. We'll skip over Health and Human Services. Facilities and Infrastructure, Leslie, Dean Claiborne, Vice Chair.
Facilities and Infrastructure will meet on Friday.
Thank you. Capital Plan Review Committee, we do have a resolution. We haven't met since the last legislature meeting, we did meet today at 5 o'clock. As I described last meeting, that we had had an informal resolution at committee, and we met this afternoon to approve the language that's in the resolution you have in front of you. So I would like to have Mike address this resolution.
Yes. I'd like to move the resolution B, directing staff to investigate alternative locations for programs currently housed at the old library.
Thank you. Is there a second? Kathy seconds that. And I wanted to mention that I, I'll let you talk about it if you'd like, Mike, but I wanted to mention that in your red folder is the resolution from 2005 accepting the space use master plan, and that was a report developed over a couple of years, and the I put on your tables today some excerpts from that plan so that you could have a look. Somebody had asked me, have we ever actually voted to sort of move out of the old library? And so there are a number of places in the space use master plan, and I sort of highlighted those where that really was discussed thoroughly, and that really was the policy that we came to as part of this analysis. So I just wanted to provide that information to you folks. Mike, did you want to say anything else introducing
this? Yeah, I just wanted to mention that what this is all about is carrying forth the recommendations of the space use master plan in stages, let's put it that way. We have two programs housed at the old library. Staff has come to us from Buildings and Grounds and said the old library is not doing very well. The roof is in bad shape. The boiler could go anytime, so could the air conditioning unit. And if we have programs there and those units went or and had to be replaced quickly in the middle of winter, for example, for the boiler, we'd have to spend an awful lot of money on that because we had no choice because the programs were there. So I think the Capital Plan Review Committee wants to begin to look at some options. If we moved those programs to other locations temporarily, into rental space, for example, would then free up the old library, and then we could begin to make a recommendation on its future, whether it is mothballed for a while, whether it is deconstructed, or whether it's sold. But I think the SUMP talks about keeping the location, and also the possibility of sometime in the future it could be an office structure for the center of government.
Thank you very much, Mike. Pam?
Yes, I'm not quite sure why this is before us right now. I don't know. I'm not remembering correctly. But I mean, for example, COFA has been, we've been looking for a place for COFA for years. and I don't remember there being a resolution passing the legislature saying that we were going to look for a place for COFA. It just seems like when we have no prospect here of moving it, I with the health department, did we pass a resolution saying that we were going to move the health department before we had any sites picked out? I mean, so you did that early on.
Well, and the space use master plan talks about COFA and about the health department building. In fact, the health department building was sort of the first decision recommended in SUMP. And COFA is addressed in there, too.
Yeah, I guess my question is, it just seems like this is a step. If in that master plan we said that we were going to move these departments, then I don't understand why we are saying it again. I mean, I have no problem with it. It just feels in the interest of not duplicating and spending time on things that we don't need to spend time on. That's sort of where I'm coming from in this. It's not the question of whether we should move it or not. It's just that.
Leslie, do you want to answer that, or is it something
I else? Don't want to answer that. It looks like Mike.
All right, Mike.
I just want to say I agree with you, Pam, that that's what the Space Use Master Plan said. I think this resolution says, let's get going. Let's find some alternate space.
And it was a sense of making sure everybody's on board, not just right. One committee that sent staff off in a direction. Leslie.
So I'm recalling that 3 or 4 years ago, we had an entire study that we paid for the records division
considering a move to Boswick Road, and I'm wondering where that factors in. If we're going to let staff go through this whole process again, if there's already something that exists, there probably isn't the need to do that again. So it might be just a little revision that says dust out what had already been done, especially for the records division, because it came complete with budget and the amounts and whether it's a temporary building or not. I mean, I wasn't in favor of going to Boswick Road, but there's already something that's done, and that needs to be recognized somewhere here, even if it's just on the record for staff to dust it out.
Kathy, you want to answer that? Or?
Kind of.
Okay, why don't you go? Frank, I've got you on the list, right? Okay, go ahead, Kathy.
I've served on a couple of iterations of the Space Needs Committee, and I think Leslin's questions and Pam's comments speak to the heart of why we're doing this. We need to proceed apace, and we need to show that we've made decisions and given staff direction for the next step. Instead of assuming that steps follow each other, we need to say what it is that we're asking for, because otherwise there's a tendency to assume that something was implied in the resolution or that there was a next step that we had all agreed to. It's right here.
And the Boswick Road, certainly that will be pulled out. All this says is staff and that Arell and Ed go back and look at look at SUMP again, look at whatever information we have, look at the landscape again, things change. Go back and look at everything, report back to capital plan review. So it doesn't doesn't specify we want any specific thing to happen, just an exploration.
I got that part, Martha. I just wanted to make sure that that's there because we spent some money on that. Okay.
I'm sure they'll look at that. Frank?
Thanks, Martha. Just to reiterate, the space use master plan that we did a couple of years back had three priorities in it. One was to move the health department. The second was COFA. And the third was the center of government building. And those were the three priorities in that plan. What Martha's provided is that section that is particular to one piece of that report. Just to piggyback on Leslin's comment about Boswick Road, there was also a companion report done for the archives when we were considering a joint effort with the History Center and doing something with them and collaborating, so, because we give them money for their rent in the building that they're in. And we were planning, I wish Dooley was here because she would remember it better than I, there was some effort to parlay some of the state money on the in the archives money to proceed with that as well. So I'm glad to hear what Martha said, that if indeed, yes, this resolution is a little bit redundant, but even having said that, the fact that it will resurrect a lot of these other reports, the one Leslin mentioned, and I would hope the report that was presented on establishing an archive, a records center, would also be reviewed. It's simply not to go out and find some other space to move everything into, whether it's buying or renting or whatever, but just to start the process as it was described. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. And this is the full report, and I'll leave it on the counter. It's got a couple of pages tabbed, including there are appendices with more information in the report. And actually, in the pages that I copied for you, there is a section on COFA also, even just happens to be on that page. Brian?
That's a collector's item, Martha.
What, this?
Yeah,
we don't want it to go anywhere.
Just thanks, Martha. Obviously, myself and several others of us weren't here for all this history of this. But the way I read this is just let's remember this. Let's expedite it so that we're not going to be spending good, or throwing good money after bad, as Mike says. And let's do it before we're wasting money, because we haven't got it to waste.
That's right. Any other questions or comments? I've just passed the report around if you want to take a quick look while we're talking. So ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution B, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. That's all for capital plan review. Oh, I'm sorry. Except that we will not have our meeting next Thursday, August 12th. That's being canceled, and we'll meet in September. Government Operations, Mike Lane, Chair.
Actually, there has been no meeting since I reported at the last legislature meeting. I can report that there has been a meeting of the subgroup on minutes, so that's proceeding. But we did have a leftover resolution from our last meeting, and I'd like to move that. And that's Resolution C, authorization to appropriate funds from contingent fund to pay for the annual maintenance of the county code for the county attorney. So moved.
Is there a second? Less than seconds. Questions or comments? All in favor of Resolution C, please raise your hand. We need a short roll call. I'm sorry.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Does anyone wish to be recorded as no? All right, that's unanimous. Frank, we took care of HHS when you were out of the room, so... No, I'm sorry. We're going to go backwards, and would you like to report for HHS?
And as the acting vice chair of the board, I would like to take command of this meeting. So it's... The committee met for two sessions last week, and as has already been reported, we had a marathon three-hour meeting each day to review the individual forms that were submitted. It was very worthwhile, and I'd like to echo the remarks and thank the departments for all of the work and the staff for what they put into those. Gave us an opportunity to get somewhat familiar with some of the programs that some folks don't even know take place in the county. Pardon me. The next official committee meeting is the 11th, which is a week from tomorrow. I just want to alert you that we have not received, and Joe assures me they're coming, the agency forms yet that come through HHS. And once we receive those, there are 20, 25 of them that we're pretty sure are coming in. But that represents 422 pages of material. We'll have to set up a couple of more meetings to review those individual forms. It's coming through the Human Services Coalition. They're their divisions plus 17 or 18 of the direct reviews that they do. And then we have independent ones that will come to us, like TCA and the SPCA that we have to review as well. So stay tuned on that. We don't have the forms yet, but once we do, we'll set them up. I want to make a request of the committee. The health department has moved into the new building. They're unpacking boxes, and it's probably still a little bit of a can of worms up there. But if any of you would like, maybe not the August meeting, but perhaps the September meeting, I'm tempted to organize a little tour of that building. Some of us have been in it, and some of you perhaps haven't, and it might be nice to see it with furniture in it and it under operation. So if the committee would like, we can certainly talk to whoever we have to see if we can arrange a tour and invite any of the other board members along on that.
Frank, we're going to have a ribbon cutting at some point, right?
God willing, we will.
Right. I asked Sigrid today at the blood drive, and
I think everybody's apprehensive. You know, They're at a point where they're waiting for permission to hang pictures on the wall. So this is called a little bit at a time, right? Yes, but the answer to your question, yes.
We don't have a date yet.
No date.
Okay.
Again, the next meeting is a week from tomorrow, the 11th. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Frank. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality, Pam McAsee, Chair.
The Planning Committee will meet tomorrow at 3:30 in the old jail.
All right, rolling right along. Census, nothing on census, right? Budget and Capital, Jim Dennis, Chair.
We went by that census committee already?
Yeah, we did.
I was waiting for that one. We have three items. Let me just say, not to bore you with hearing repetitive things that two or three people have already done, but I'm going to do it anyway. The assessment sheets, the Budget Committee went through our first two departments, and then I spent time as a member of the HHS with Frank and then Nathan's committee yesterday. And I think the sheets have worked very well throughout this whole process. And as it continues on, it looks like to me from the Budget Committee point of view that it will be an assist to us when we get the line item budget put in place that Joe will have to give us in September. So I think and tweaks have been made and clearly suggestions have been made to change them as we move forward with them. So I think it, as an innovation to the budget process, it's been pretty helpful. So, you know, I'm pleased with the response from people on the committee, the Budget Committee, but all the other committees too, and especially all the work that the department heads literally had to do to make that produce those documents for. Let me just move right to the resolutions. There are three yellow resolutions in your folder, and the first one is item D. It's an authorization to contribute to the reserves of the Greater Tompkins County Municipal Health Insurance Consortium, and I would move that.
Nathan seconds. Thank you. Do you want to introduce that at all? Or should I turn that to Joe?
Do you want me to? Take a look at the resolution, and you can see what the initial capitalization costs are for us, the city, and every member of the consortium. What it amounts to is the money that we have to put forward so that we can begin the operation of the consortium to have a reserve. And I think one of the big problems that we've had to get the consortium on the ground and running is the discussion Joe, Don Barber, and others have had with the New York State Insurance Department to, in a sense, change the level of the amount of money that would be put forward that we had to hold so that we could make this thing go. And they were treating us like an insurance company rather than an organization that could raise money rather quickly. So from my point of view, and having not been involved in the initial workshop, the beginning of the thing, other than an observer, Nate was involved, and the Steve Losey's consortium, I think we're finally to a point where we can say that we will be operating this in a full-blown way, probably. Let me say October might be a day. There's been a lot of give and take, a lot of cooperation, a lot of discussion between municipalities, unions, and I think, and I believe Joe does, and everyone else involved in this, can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and we will have this thing up and operating and saving money for everyone involved for sure.
Thank you very much, Jim. Okay, Pam, then Peter, then Frank. Did you have your hand up? Okay, Peter.
I'm very sympathetic to the goal. On the other hand, I really am. I usually don't get scared, but the things that Joe keeps saying every 2 weeks scare me more and more. And in particular, I was just thinking the last thing that Jim said, that they don't treat us like a company. They don't treat us like a government, that like an entity that can simply raise taxes anytime to ensure that has the taxing power.
Excuse me, I did not say raise taxes. I said could raise money.
Well, could raise money, but that it seems to me is now being called into question, that position. If I understood what Joe was saying. So I feel some concern about the fact that with these pressures that we're seeing, And the feeling that I had gotten from what the director of the budget has reported earlier about the fact that that we had cash flow problems earlier this year, and what I heard from Joe before, that this year we could not dip into our reserves the way we periodically had been for bad years. I just wondered, is it really prudent to take this much money out of our return fund, so out of our reserve fund? So that's my question.
And it's a good question, Peter. This is, in I think everybody's view, a part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem. One of the ways that we need to build in structural savings in our own budget for a very difficult 2011 and beyond is to find ways to reduce our costs, and this will. And one of our largest sources of increase in the budget has been the cost of health benefits. So this will allow us to begin reducing the cost of health benefits to our employees without affecting the quality of the services that they get. With respect to your specifics, where's the money going to come from, and what will that do? First of all, the $500,000 is something that David Squires has looked at very carefully. When it looked as if we were going to have to come up with almost $2.5 million worth of reserves, you recall that when the state was still at, I think it was a total of, I think it was 22% combined reserves. It looked as if the municipalities were going to have to come up with almost $2.5 million of upfront cash money. Don Barber at that time went to each of the participating municipalities and said, what can you do? How much can you come up with to contribute to this gap? His goal was everybody would contribute proportionate to their share of our premiums. That seemed fair. And if we were to do that, our share is about 55% of the total. So we would have had to kick in about, with the lower number, $667,000. It was even higher when the target was in the $2.5 million range. And David Squire says, I can't do it. The most we can do is $500,000. And I've talked to David, and also he discussed this with the Budget Committee the other day. We have the capacity to do it, because in the transition to the new plan, there's basically a month where payments are skipped. There's a lag. This is the way it was explained at the Budget and Capital the other day. And we can take advantage of that, so we can pay this bill without having to eat into our reserves or ask anybody else to reduce spending. We can do it in stride, so we have the capacity to do it. I want to make sure it's characterized the right way, because I think it can be viewed as an investment. And I know that's a cliche. It's not an expenditure, it's an investment. But in fact, this is an investment. This money, if the cash flows are accurate, will come back to us in 5 years at 3% interest. And right now we're investing our money at 0.5%. So it's actually a pretty good return on investment for our money, better than we can get in the markets right now. And again, this is an important step forward in actually implementing this plan. We should save $250,000 a year at least by getting into this plan. So that $500,000 we put in up front, we're going to get back very, very quickly. So that's a very long answer to a short and direct question, but it came to be.
It was an answer I understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. Peter, Frank?
Thanks, Martha. Joe, just going back, I had three questions. One was the savings, and I thought I heard you say it was $250,000 a year.
Well, I think at least $250,000. We're spending now, we believe, $20,000 a month more than we would have had we gotten into the plan. So it's at least $250,000 a year.
And this is a one-time contribution to capitalize this reserve.
Yeah. And yes, and you've just given me an opening, because there was another point that I wanted to make. In building this upfront reserve, that allowed the state insurance department to say, we're going to reduce your overall level of reserves by $1 million. So a few weeks ago, they said your reserve target is $5 million. Now they've said, if you can put $1.2 million up front in the bank, we'll reduce that overall reserve requirement to $4 million.
Oh.
Significant savings.
Last question. Since this resolution breaks down the contributions by the participating municipalities, would one assume that all of them have agreed to these dollar amounts?
All have pledged. All are going through the process we're going through right now. They're going through board approval right now. And I will tell you that four of the municipalities, the town of Ithaca, Caroline, Danby, and Dryden, have actually contributed more than their proportionate share to this. So most of the municipalities are contributing the same fraction as their contribution to premiums. We're less, cities a little less, and four other municipalities have stepped up, and they're actually in for a larger than proportionate share of the contribution. So they helped a lot.
Is there any, in the first resolve, is there any need to say something along the lines that you just said, that this was formulaic, or is some clarification that there's agreement? It almost looks like we're the ones that are causing them, or not forcing, but encouraging them to give at these levels. But it's by agreement that they've agreed to make that contribution. Does that need to be said?
I don't know that it needs to be said, Frank.
Maybe would that make it any strong? Does this go to the state to show them that we're
no, this is really the agreement among the municipalities that we're good for our individual country. The only thing the state cares about, they don't care where it comes from. As long as there's $1.2 million in the bank, they're happy.
All right. Thank you.
Nathan and Kathy.
I just want to say that I think it's fantastic that that this resolution is before us and that we're going to be capitalizing on this fund. And it's nice because, you know, there's so many things that get talked about. You even pass resolutions that you're for, but it doesn't mean anything unless there's money actually dedicated to it. And so seeing this step, this crucial step, it's a wonderful thing. And really, you know, thank you, Joe, to Don Barber, to TCOG, to the members of that healthcare consortium, and LOCI and Cahill, because the work that's been done there over the past couple of years has been just incredible.
Kathy?
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else? Dave?
Yeah, Joe, I just had another question. You said it was originally $5 million, and they reduced it to 4, but the upfront is 1.2.
Yes.
How do we get from 1.2 to 4?
That's a good question, too, Dave. It is from premium revenue. So the actual payments that the municipalities make into the consortium, the way the system works, once we get into the consortium, we'll begin to incur costs. I'll go to the doctor. But the bill for that takes a while before it comes into the system. All the while, everybody is paying into that system.
Okay.
So there's a difference between revenues and expenses that very quickly forms the basis of reserves. So they're self-funded. By the end of the first year, we should be at that $4 million level.
Okay, so the timeline is for 1 year.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Leslie?
I just got my question answered. Thank you.
Okay. Cool. Anything else? Ready to vote. All in favor, Resolution D. Please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. It's great. Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This is so good. I think that if it is allowed in state law, we should put this on the road and appeal to other counties, localities, and close to Tompkins County, and see if we can get some of their employees to join. Resolution E, authorizing the issuance of 1.45 million. Serial bonds of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of repaving Ellis Hollow Road, and I would move that. And I would ask someone who can speak to this better than me, if they would like to, go ahead and do it.
All right, Mike seconds. All right. Anyone in facilities? Joe, anybody? You mean about the bonding?
Well, no, I understand about the bonding. I also understand that there was some money in the highway fund that we put in reserve account over the years before some of us came here. And this is the culmination. This is how much we need to bond the project to get the project done. Somewhere in the resolution, it tells the total cost of the project, $2.1 million.
And that other money is money that we have set aside over a number of years to do such a project, do this project to end up.
So,
okay.
Jim, I'm confused. Is the 1.4 represented by this bond the
remaining
the balance of what we need to close the gap?
I believe so.
Okay. That's what I understood, too.
Did I not say that?
No, but if suddenly you've found, you know, $1 million floating around in another account that we don't need anymore.
No, the 2.1 is the cost of the project, and
gotcha.
As you know, the county has contributed to a highway fund for years and years and years to do this sort of thing.
Peter?
I have a question for Joe. Why does it make sense to put away money to do road projects? Why doesn't it make better sense just to fund the whole thing by bonds when you need it?
I can give you a really long answer there. I could probably go really long on that. To the extent that you can build up, if borrowing becomes a part of the routine, if you're borrowing routinely for projects, it's really a part of your baseline activity. So ideally, you'd have enough cash in hand to maintain a certain level of highway projects every year. And I think that's what this county is trying to do, recognizing that it's always going to have another project in the hopper. I wasn't here for this particular one, so I don't know what the impetus was to set up the reserve for this particular one. So I can't speak to that. But again, the basic idea is to have enough cash in hand to sustain an ongoing level of improvement every year. If you get a very expensive project, you can borrow for that additional amount. That's the best I can do.
Jim?
The simple answer that I've always learned about bonding and putting away money is if you bond everything, it affects your credit rating. And you bump up against your limit that you're allowed to bond, and things begin to happen to you. And I think Squires would agree. Things begin to happen to you in the financial world that are negatives for governments if you tend to build your bonds too close to what your taxable bond limit is. So that's
Frank.
Yeah, Martha or Joe, I think my recollection on this particular project was at the time that we voted to move ahead with it, which wasn't just a year or two ago, it was some 5 or 6 years ago, maybe even more, the cost of bonding was more expensive than it is today, and it was cheaper to set some money aside because we weren't earning anything on the interest anyway. It was cheaper to park some of the money so that when we thought we had to borrow, we were borrowing. The anticipation was we'd be borrowing at a higher percentage. It turns out that we may be borrowing at a pretty reasonable rate because David is very good at doing that. So I think that's the reason, Peter, if I remember right.
Carol?
Yeah, I will support this tonight, but I think that part of the reason that we do it as a long-range plan is so that both we as a legislature and our constituents, our residents, know that there is a long-range plan for how we'll address the needs to keep our roads up. I was not in favor of I didn't think we could afford a budget time. I did not think we could afford to keep our roads up, all of them, on the same schedule that had been defined back then, and up to the same standards. We decide we pick a standard we'd like to keep them to, among many standards one could choose to keep your roads to, and then figure out how much that's going to cost. And, you know, budget time, I was not so sure we could afford to do that this year, and I'm not so sure we can continue to afford to do it at the same rate at which we have set our sights over the next number of years. But my colleagues felt otherwise, and it is in our budget, and so, you know, our staff has proceeded with that assumption, and so I will vote to proceed with this now. But I'm not sure for the future that we can afford to keep going at the rate we've been, or you know. So I believe in long-range planning on these things, we may have to revisit the time frame for the plan in the future.
Anyone else? Ready to vote. We need a roll call, and we need a two-thirds approval of this as a borrowing measure. So, Kathy?
Mr. Burbank?
Aye.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. Mackesy?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
Yes.
Ms. Pryor?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
14 ayes.
Thank you. That passes unanimously. And you have one more.
Thank you. Resolution F on your yellow sheet, 2153, budget adjustment and appropriation of unspent funds from 2009 to various accounts, and I would move that.
So there's less than seconds. Any questions? Frank?
Yeah, it's probably a question for Nathan. When we did rollover for these, when we set this up, it was set up so that people, the departments weren't, it wasn't a use it or lose it situation. And again, I'm not on public safety, Nathan, so you'll have to guide me here a little bit. But the list, except for the electronic monitoring of services, and perhaps the one that's $749, some of these look like they're grabbing, pardon me for saying this, but they're grabbing the money before there's some apprehension that we may take it as for another use, because the transfers are pretty small and they're for printers and maintenance kits and whatnot. What's your sense of this, Nathan? Or maybe you're the wrong committee to ask that question of. Maybe it's Jim's committee. Is that blunt enough, by the way?
Yeah, that's fine, Frank. Let me just back up and not, and I'll try not to answer the question, but answer the question. I think it's the time has come in this government to again have a discussion about rollover and the use of rollover and how it should be contemplated in the future. And that's pretty much what I'll say now, and I will certainly try to, with the county administrator and his people, to set up that discussion at one of the upcoming budget meetings prior to the EBC part of the budget. So I think the process so far this year has been one where people have made requests to the county administrator. We followed the documents that we have. If it were a 2010 request, then it stayed in the 2010 time. Anything that was going to be used in 2011 was denied. And, you know, I know that there are people in the legislature who are wondering why we should even do the 2010 expenditures given the current financial situation of this county and every other county. But, you know, and I think it's a discussion we have to have. Many of us, when we first came on the legislature, said, what is this rollover and why don't we do this and why don't we do that? Because we came from other governments that handled it differently. So, Joe, bail me out, please.
Follow up.
Sure.
So, Jim, you did real well about not answering the question.
Well,
but okay.
Well, Joe wants to try.
But before you do that,
yeah,
I received, and I think some of us on planning received a message from Ed Marks. One of those numbers has to be adjusted, doesn't it?
Yes. Would you like me to?
Yeah.
On this, the second page, packet page 10, Planning Department, 8,502. Ed has asked that be deleted from that list. He apparently has alternative funds. I think it was an encumbrance that was available to him, so we won't need that 8,502 in rollover. So if that can be amended out.
So is that friendly to to Jim and Leslie?
Yeah, yes, it is.
That's fine.
So we've got to change the general fund balance number two on the front page?
Do you need a mover?
Wait a minute. Was there something else to change on?
No, it was really more of a general response to the point that Frank was making about the use of rollover here. I think what you see this year is a much more stringent use of rollover for the current year than you may have seen in prior years. I think a lot of departments have asked for this money to be used only if they know they have to spend that money. And then we had to review that and agree that this is, by and large, an essential expense. So we allowed it. We recommended it to you, and you see it here. But when you look at the small fraction of the surplus that was generated that's being applied this year, I think you'd find that that's a lot smaller than prior years. Most departments have said, we realize 2011 is going to be a very difficult year, and they've asked to basically keep these monies in play for possible use, subject to your approval, in 2011.
Joe, does that general fund number of 129 need to be reduced by the 8,000?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, so we will get the numbers fixed up. Okay.
Thanks.
Mike and then Peter. I'm sorry, that we have to change the 172 in the second whereas also, right? That Les is requested.
There's not a request in this resolution that isn't justified, that we probably need in our departments. But I'm not going to support this resolution because I think it's time to draw the line in the sand and say we've got to stop spending because of everything we've talked about tonight. We've talked about the possibility of not having the mortgage tax bill passed that we had counted on. We're talked about this possibility of a tax cap on what we can do. We know we've got an 11.9% problem with the budget to begin with. We don't know what's going to happen with Medicaid, if there's going to be a $1 billion gap at the state level, and that's thrown back at us at the county level, that's another hit. I realize it's not a lot of money. I appreciate what the department heads have done and what our administration have done. But I think there's over $1 million in rollover money, including this money, including 2011 money, and I think we shouldn't spend it.
Peter?
Yeah, I find myself somewhat torn on this. I'm sympathetic to what Mike says, but I'm generally opposed to lines in the sand. And if it's my understanding that someone in the county administrator's office has looked at each one of these requests and said they sound right. I mean, I know I'm not able to look at any of them and make a decision as to whether they make sense or not, but I would be a whole lot happier if someone had looked at them and said that someone outside of the department had looked at them and said that they seem okay. Am I correct in that assumption?
Yeah, it happened at staff level, and then it went to me for my review, too, before it came to you.
Okay. I mean, there's nothing good in this year, but that reassures me, and I'll vote for this.
Thank you, Peter. Pat?
I'm not going to support this either, and I've gone back and forth on this. Those of you that have sat with me in meetings know that I'm one of the people that I think Jim is referring to that hasn't been here early on to hear all the discussion from prior years and so on. And although I think I understand from the briefings that I've had from various people, the merits of the policy on rollover funds that has been operational, And I think I, in general, support that. I think that it's probably been a good thing for the county. However, my thinking is a little bit different than Mike's, and it's not so much that I think we need to draw a line in the sand as it is that I think that we need to look at whatever the resources are that we have as a county in terms of the entire picture that the county is facing. And when we start spending money in small amounts, here and there, like this use of the rollover funds. We're only looking at a piece of the picture. We're not looking at the entire picture. And so what I would like to see happen would be to have the money that's in the rollover account just put on hold, not saying that we're not going to spend it for these things eventually, but that the relative merits of these requests be put out along with all the other requests that we're going to have to deal with, and then make a decision as to whether or not these are really the priorities for which this money ought to be spent. And for that reason, I am not going to support this at this time. The only question that I have about any of the individual requests is I don't understand. I should have thought to ask this when the people were there, and I just didn't think of it. With the Board of Elections to hold a primary, clearly they're going to need money. But I don't understand why that wouldn't have been part of their regular budget.
Joe?
And that's an excellent point. Last year, as we were trying to tighten our belt and bring a budget into balance, we had to take a lot of risks as a part of that budget, and they were all explicit. And one of those risks was we wouldn't have a primary in 2010. Well, we now know we will, and at that time it was said, we'll draw on the general contingency of the county to do that. Elections is saying we have rollover, we'll apply our own rollover to the cost of those primary elections. There's a few other things on here that in my department, for example, we had a terminal pay. We had an employee leave. We had to make terminal pay. We have to make the payments. We could have come to the general contingency. Instead, we're saying we'll apply our rollover to do that. And I think as you go through here, and I think we've done this in committee, you'll find that there's a good reason for all of these. And again, I guess I just point your eye toward the fact that we're only using, and it's still a lot of money, but $120,000 of the $1.4 million that was saved by the departments last year. And I'll remind you, too, we did not allow departments to use rollover that was saved in their personnel lines last year. That's a first. We kept that for the county for the general fund. So you can't touch it. And there's another, let's say, $500,000 in savings there that has come right to the general fund. Last year, that would have come into this sheet and would have been requested as a rollover.
I've got Pam and then Frank and then Carol. But let me just, I realize the mistake I made on that number in the second whereas. So the point you're making is essentially that $172,650 was requested. We're now approving about $120,000.
Yes.
So we haven't. We will not have approved all the requests that were made. Okay. Pam, Frank, Carol.
Well, I think that in general, I think that I'm sympathetic with what Mike is saying about where the position we're in, the financial position we're in, and I think we have to look carefully. The problem with just cutting this off at this particular point is because I think we need to allow departments to have some notice that they're not going to get this money because, of course, they are letting things go by in anticipation of being able to use rollover the next year. And I am going to support this because of that fact. I think in the future I may not support use of rollover. But for example, in the planning department, to match the Park Foundation grant for municipal supports planner, I mean, we already voted for that. That position will be created for a year. So I feel as if that this just is, that it's just too short a notice and that we need to perhaps have a discussion, as Jim was saying, about this and putting a stop to the use of rollover. But at this particular point, I will support this resolution.
And I just want to emphasize that this is not the discussion about rollover. So if we can try to limit our comments. I said to myself, well, we won't have a break tonight. I think we can get through this. So if we can focus on the resolution at hand, that'd be great. So Frank and then Carol.
I agree with what Pam just described. The only other one I draw your attention to is the need for the Office for the Aging piece. But I'm going to support this resolution.
Carol?
Yeah, I'll support it as well. But I shared Pat's concern and Mike's that I came to the first committee meeting I came to with where we had a request for use of rollover was the PDEC. And at the program committee level, we went through those requests and we made some reductions to those. So before we approved them, we had a chance to comment on them. And I would trust that our other committees did that as well. It does sound as though they did. And then I came to my next committee, GO, and there was a longer list. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, are we encumbering all of our rollover? What's the point of asking our departments to have saved it? And then we heard one by one from the various departments, and I heard some very good cases, the first being the one on the primaries, and it's very clear that if we don't fund this by this method, it's going to come. We'll have to go into a contingent fund. And then I would like to just check my memory with other people on GO. The other biggest piece of this, this whole request, is the $50,000 plus $23,000, which is $73,000, to scan records. And my memory is that that will, the ability to scan records now with rollover, the budget that had been saved, means that they will not have to come to us on the schedule we had anticipated to build a building to store records. And to me, you know, spending their rollover that they managed to save in order to avoid the much larger cost that we had heard about in the plan that Leslin referred to before seemed to be a good, wise use of these funds. And again, one by one. So I'm going to trust that other committees did that as well. So for those reasons, I will support this.
Are we ready to vote?
Yes.
We need a short form roll call.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Is there anyone who wishes to be recorded as no? That would be Mike and Pat. Okay, thank you very much.
We're not done. We have the September is coming, and you have a expanded budget committee calendar to look at, and we received a few comments. We're in the process of finalizing that. I do not know what departments will be at what dates. At this time, we will learn that as the days roll on into September. We have another meeting, and oh, by the way, I would start my comments about the budget and how we should save money and all those wonderful things that we're all. We like to say when the budget comes and we really have to deal with the total package because, as the county administrator says to me on the telephone once in a while, gee, what a great job you have being chair of the budget committee. And I say, oh, yeah, it is wonderful, and especially this year. But it's one that I accepted and all of us on this legislature will have to deal with this, and I'm just kind of leading us through the mess. And I hope we can get there in September and October. And, what my goal is, everyone should rest up for 2 weeks in August and be ready to go when we have to do all this in a really serious way in every department impacting all the residents of the county. And our next meeting will be August 9th.
Thank you very much, Jim. And Kathy, do we have enough responses from responses from everybody about the calendar, or do you still need people to?
I think we do. We'll be working with Jim to get
Michelle.
Second draft or final calendar out.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Jim. We have a member filed resolution.
Public
resolution
safety.
G.
Public
safety.
Wait a minute, we have a public safety.
Sorry, Nathan.
Oh, it's all right.
It was right there. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Public Safety Chair Nathan Shinigami.
Yes. We had a lot of discussion yesterday about many different items. First, from assigned counsel, talking about the new governor's office on, what is it, indigent? Indigent legal services. Right. And talked about how these potential changes could, in a way, penalize the way that we run our assigned counsel system, because we run it well. And many counties need to get up to our level of representation of legal services. But hopefully, if Joe's appointed to this board, he can provide representation and set this board on a correct path as it institutes these changes. Next, we had a presentation from Tom Parsons about his time in Lycoming County with gas drilling and how this county took a more proactive approach with the natural gas drilling companies in terms of doing the emergency preparedness planning for it. So it was a good presentation. We did our impact statement reviews. And then finally, the next two items that I'm going to talk about, I'm going to talk about as a group, because both of them were me channeling Frank Proto. And because, you know, Frank and I are just so like each other, you know, in so many ways. And so, the first one is on, we asked Pat Buchel the status of the study on recidivism. And she had told us that originally there was a fee that we would have had to pay in order to get access to this information. And she and Dina Bodner have worked on getting that fee waived. And we would have had to apply for a grant or get some sort of, you know, funding to do that. So that's a good first step. And so they are currently getting all of the paperwork in order to start accessing that database. Already the probation department's looking at their own records so that they could sync up with all that information. So, Frank, to answer your question from maybe two meetings ago, I think, that stuff is moving along, and there's been progress made.
Thank you.
Yeah. And second, we did have a resolution from the district attorney. And this is a request for contingent fund money usage to cover expenses incurred from some of the high-profile cases that we've had for expert witnesses. And also, Frank, for contingent fund for, I think, about $17,000 or so dollars to cover costs for the SBCA.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Did it pass?
Huh? And that resolution passed.
Can you say, Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
Can you say again how much the SBCA piece was?
I don't know. Does anyone have the exact resolution? I think it was like 17.5 or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that was a bargain, because the cost ran over $40,000.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, good. Thank you, Nathan.
Yes,
thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you, committee.
It is my responsibility to be responsive to your requests and needs.
Okay, let's try a couple of more then.
Okay. Any questions for Nathan? Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that. We do have a member filed resolution. Frank, you want to take it away?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Should I read the title?
Yes, sir.
It's
resolution
long.
G.
Resolution G. Urging the State of New York to resolve the issues of video lottery terminal operations at Aqueduct Racetrack, to make prescribed statutory mandated payments to New York Racing Association, and to ensure that off-track betting honors its financial obligations to the New York Racing Association. And I'll move that and then speak to it.
And Jim seconds that.
I will second that.
All right, go ahead, Frank.
Several of you have called me and asked me questions about this particular item, and because of the allusion to gambling as it's associated with it, there were a couple of comments this evening prior to this meeting with regard to some newspaper articles that we have to, I'd appreciate having, and Peter already said he'd send them to me, reviewing, and so did Will. But I wanted to take a minute and just give you a quick overview of what this is and how it applies to Tompkins County, if you'd bear with me for a few minutes. The Ag and Farmland Board, we took it to the Ag and Farmland Board last week, And unfortunately, they did not have a quorum, but the general sense was they would have passed it had they had a quorum. Because of the impact of the equine industry on Tompkins County. I spoke, the statistics that I have are coming from the 2000 equine survey done by the state of New York, plus the 2007 equine study that came from the state of New York. Jeannie Griffiths up at Cornell, who's part of Cornell Cooperative Extension, is the equine specialist that represents the state in our county. Some of it came from New York State Breeders Association. This resolution did not come from the racing, New York racing, as I was asked. And we've done some work with the impact of agriculture on the county. General overview. The types of things that this money goes to fund, indeed, it's generated by people using the video lottery machines that are not in existence right now, but they would go into Aqueduct. And the fund would provide, we were told, about $1 million that we're losing a day, according to the stats that we were given by the Breeders Association. And that money's going to New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and to some extent to Canada. It would go directly into the fund that the state would redistribute to NYRA, the Racing Association, which then funds programs like the breeders' fees, the racing purses, such as the racing that goes on up at Trumansburg during the Trumansburg Fair, Tioga County, where the racing takes place down at Tioga Downs, Vernon Downs. Some of that's standard bred racing, some of it's thoroughbred racing. We have different owners in this county, the Purdy's out in Caroline, Becker out in West Danby, Palangeli, who owns a fleet of horses as well. There are breeders' fees that they get reimbursed for. And then it also goes to, as you can check the drift, to support feed and grain operations. I mean, if any of you have done any buying of such, even if you've gone to buy dog food, as Pat and I were talking about already, you know that Ithaca Grain gets some of this, Agway gets some of this indirectly. Lilly's and Dryden get some of this. Organizations like the Carriage House up in Trumansburg, they get some of this too. Cornell probably gets a piece of this as well because of the association they have. Cornell is a designated equine testing lab right now in the state. If you drive out towards the end of the airport and you go out on Warren Road, there's a building that's tucked off to the right. That's the equine testing lab. And my understanding is that they get seven figures a year, at least from the state. The Baker Institute up on Snyder Hill Road does some of the same study.
Frank?
Yes.
To wrap up.
Well, I'm trying to.
Let's see what the questions are. So,
well,
if you want to wrap up.
As long as I will have an opportunity for an answer, I'm trying to give you an idea of what the impact is on the county. Haven't even talked about the agricultural aspect, the veterinary money that comes in, or the cost of doing that. And I'd be happy to get into that a little bit. But I think it's important to know that the $50 million or so that's generated in this county from agriculture, the number I put in this resolution came right from the association, right from Cooperative Extension. Just the sales alone of just certain types of horses in this county generated $2 million in 2007. Just those horse sales. Doesn't count anything about the grain, the feed, what Missouri does out in Newfield, and on and on and on. But I can give you chapter and verse on that. Perhaps you're right. We ought to see what the questions might be. Maybe I can handle that. But okay. I appreciate your support on this, basically.
Thank you, Frank. Peter and then Mike.
I would like to make a motion to postpone this indefinitely. And if I get a second, I'd like to speak to that motion.
Is there a second?
I have a second.
I'm sorry, Dave, you second that? Okay. Go ahead, Peter.
Thanks. I do understand the reason why Frank is making this motion, but I am myself very reluctant to vote on motions that I don't really understand, particularly motions that affect business that is not our business, although perhaps impacting us. And I was concerned about this because it's a motion that talks to one side of an issue. And when I saw it first, I wondered, well, what was the other side? I mean, why hasn't Albany acted on this? Is this just another example of the confusion that seems to take place in Albany and the things got lost? Are there issues there? And I felt that before I could vote on this, I wanted to try to understand the other side. Why hasn't it proceeded through? And so what I did was I made a call to the governor's office to try to find out why it is the governor hasn't acted on this. But unfortunately, my calls were not returned, despite the promises to do so. And then I sort of spent some time, a little bit of time, not much, Googling to see what I could find out about it. And there today were a couple of articles in the New York Times, two of them that referred to this situation, and I found them extremely troubling. And this, by the way, has got nothing to do with my feeling on agriculture, my feelings on horses, my feelings on gambling. I have different views towards all of those things, but that does not enter into my decision to ask this to be postponed. The reason is that I think we don't know enough about it. So the two articles that I saw in today's New York Times, one of them had to do with a concern of irregularities in the way that the president of the New York State Senate has acted with regard to trying to favor or give information on one side of this dispute. I mean, it's not that there's just one person who wants to have this, who's bidding for control of these video terminals.
Peter, I'm really regretful. I should not have allowed you to talk about this. This is actually not a debatable resolution.
Yes, it is debatable. I'm sorry. That's why it's postponed indefinitely is debatable. It's not
according
tabled.
To our own rules, it says here this motion to call the question and to lay on the table indefinitely are not debatable according to our rules.
Okay, well.
So I let you go on, but I really need to stop that.
I'm going to try very hard. Let me just tell you what was in these two articles, because otherwise it doesn't
No,
make
Peter,
any...
I'm sorry. My ruling is that we need to vote on this. Now, if people want to hear what Peter has to say, then vote down the motion to lay on the table indefinitely, and then we can come back and discuss the resolution. So I have to ask for a vote to postpone indefinitely right now. So I will... All in favor of postponing indefinitely, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay, so that motion fails. Now I think I'd like to let you finish, and then we'll go to Frank, okay? So go ahead. And then, I'm sorry, Mike is after Peter, and then we'll go back to Frank. Go ahead, Peter.
Oh, Mike is after me. Okay. Well, what the two articles I saw that I found so disturbing is one that there's a lot of dispute about who it is that's going to get this contract, and that there were irregularities about how the New York State Senate had acted, that the head of the Senate had acted with regard to one of the people who was bidding for this. And the second article said that they were now working on a new preferred party to take care of this that comes from Malaysia someplace or other. And then Will told me something that I didn't know, that namely that this was a big controversy between the one the firm that the governor was supporting and that the firm that the leader of the state assembly was. And I frankly felt, out of all of this, that I just did not think it was appropriate for us to take a position on this one way or the other.
Mike.
Frank, the reason this didn't come through a standing committee was, is it the timing?
Frank? No standing committee?
I suspect.
If it were delayed, I know it's been voted down, but if it were delayed, would that be a problem?
What would you want to happen, Mike?
Well, there are a lot of issues here. I guess my other question is, is there any consternation about the fact that that we're talking about financing this through expansion of gambling in New York State?
Is there any consternation because of the expansion?
Do you have any problem with that?
Not particularly, because these are, you have to understand that these have been approved as part of an agreement. If you read the very first item in there, that as part of an agreement that was reached, that the Racing Association had agreed to transfer these three properties, and they have done that. And now the second half of it is getting the governor. The governor is the key person. It's the governor and two other individuals that have the authority to sign this contract. Once that's done, they will have completed their obligation under the contract in order to see it go forward. But let me go back. I don't know what questions they are. That it sounds like from Peter's concerns, there could be endless questions that may never, you'd never get satisfactory answers to every one of them, and that could be a delaying tactic. If there are actual specific questions that you'd like answered, I think we could probably delay it for one meeting if that would help out and go back to try to get the answers. The item that Peter referred to, though, if I could just try to clarify.
Can I just do something?
What?
They need to change. Dave and Jim are asking us to change the tapes. They need a minute. So if we could take a pause and you think about what you're going to say. Is that, do you need that right now?
Hit pause? Okay.
All right. Everybody, hit pause. Frank's going to think about what he's saying. Work on your questions. Tap dance a little. Okay, we're going to just tell us when we're ready. Okay. That's because we didn't have this break. You know, I think, you know, everybody else is taking a break, but the cameras have been rolling. What? One of the tape drives is down. This is unusual, but we'll get through this. Okay.
So across the bottom of the TV right now, it's saying technical difficulties?
Technical difficulties. We're all waiting for Joe to find out what Albany said on that little thing there. So.
18 minutes.
Any news from the assembly? No. Right now, or do you want to wait?
No,
you want to be
in line.
After,
get in line.
You're in line after Frank. Okay.
Jill, how about the sugar tax?
And then Will. We're all back? We are back. Okay, we're going to do Frank, Peter, then Will. Okay?
Okay.
Want
to wait for Pam?
Carol's after Will. What?
No, I'm not.
We're back. Well, the mics are going. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. What Peter was alluding to about the dispute and some discrepancies are absolutely correct. My recollection is that the governor awarded this contract sometime back in the spring, and it was awarded to what was perceived to be some of his cronies. And the Senate and the Assembly picked up on that, and they said, time out, this isn't right. And that was, as I understand it, one of the reasons why, from what Will told me earlier today, that there was another report in another newspaper that indicated that may have been one reason why the governor pulled out of the race. That's what I recollect Will telling me. But indeed, this was pulled back because of some discrepancies in what I had already mentioned. Those of you that have been following those blurbs that we get from Controller DiNapoli, you can go back. I'm really getting good with the emails because now we can go back and read a lot of reports. one or two of the ones that I've been following pertaining to this is that in order for the $25 million loan that was made earlier this year, that money was lent against the proceeds of getting the VLTs online. And one of the conditions was that Controller DiNapoli would be involved in recasting some of the concerns and redoing and undoing some of the items that NYRA was getting their hands slapped for. The same thing was true with the off-track betting piece. They're two separate items. That there were some concerns that the state auditor, the state controller, had found in the audit that raised some serious reservations on this. And he's involved, or his office staff is involved, in actually putting together and working to resolve those, they're not really discrepancies, but those concerns that have popped up on the audit. I can go on and on about
well,
the association.
Well, why don't we let some other people have a turn?
Yeah, let's hear some other questions.
Okay, thanks. Peter?
Yeah, I would like to pick up on what Frank said, that he'd be happy to postpone this for another, till our next meeting. That certainly would satisfy what I want. It came very quickly, and I would just, in the time since I learned about this, I've been unable to answer these questions. So I would certainly support that.
But what would it be that you'd want me to do?
I don't want you to do anything. I want to have time to consult the governor's office and find out what their side of the story is. Why hasn't he signed it yet? And I'd like to spend a little more time reading. I'm not asking anything of you.
Okay, let's go to Will and Carol and then. Okay.
And Peter, though I voted against your indefinite postponement, I would support holding this off for one meeting. I spent a fair amount of, I know nothing about this issue before Frank brought it to our attention, and there are many strands that I still don't, have barely begun to fathom, but I would like to know more and make an intelligent vote. So I would support if you want
to. Would you move it?
I will, in fact, move delaying this, putting this on hold for one meeting.
That is debatable, so that's fine. So, and that's seconded by Peter.
That is debatable.
That is
because
debatable.
Because that's to a specific
time. To a specific time, that's right.
Point of information?
Yeah.
Is this being referred to a committee, or is this just being put off?
The motion is to postpone this to the next legislature meeting, is how I understood you.
That's the way I made the motion. I would be willing to refer it to a committee if there's a committee that is appropriate, and I'm hard to press to think what that would be, actually.
Well,
we could form. We could form one that deals with that kind. We can get Ken Slaughter on it.
I'm kind of afraid to take it to the budget committee, because I know the guys involved in it.
All right, Carol.
I'd like permission to put my comments on the resolution itself off until we resolve the issue of whether it's being put off for a month. It would seem that planning PDEC. PDEC does consider agricultural-related activities, but it meets tomorrow, and the agenda would have to be out.
And I'm hearing the chair writhe in discomfort.
So it would have to be 2 months.
All right, Nathan.
Yes, I think postponing it to the next meeting is fine. It gives us 2 weeks to study the option. Let's go.
I think that's okay. And if anybody gets some, you know, useful information, share it with all the rest of us.
Yes,
please.
Okay. Anything else on the issue of postponing to the next legislature meeting? Okay, ready to vote? All in favor of postponing to the next meeting? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Opposed? 1. So that's 13-1. We will take this up as a member filed resolution at the next legislature meeting.
Thank you. Thanks for your thoughtful, seriously. Get me whatever you can if you research anything. Okay.
All right, great. Thank you all very much. We have minutes from two different meetings. Are you moving both at once?
Sure.
Frank says they're both July 2nd, 6th and July 20th. Is there a second? Pat seconds. Kathy.
For the record, I won't be voting in favor of either of these minutes. I'm concerned about the interpretation of the minutes policy that may lead to perceived ethics violations or actual ethics violations due to a lack of transparency in the proposed or perhaps adopted process. The fact is, there's no way of us really to tell what changes may have been made, and the fact that this is such an amorphous policy troubles me greatly, and I believe that it needs to be dealt with immediately. Therefore, because of the problems with regard to serious matters that we discuss and that are recorded in our records, I will be voting no on both of these minutes.
I have a couple of corrections to some of my own comments here that I'd like to make, but Leslin?
So do I. Page 9 of the July 20th minutes, just really small.
Okay, hold on. Let people get there. Packet page
14, no, 37.
Okay.
The line that begins on the resolution in support of, resolution 111, the line begins work 24/7.
Right.
Provide safety and services to protect our well-being. There is something missing, and I'm sure it says are protected as well. The sentence does not read well. Makes us realize how important it is for a policy-making body to make sure those who work 24/7 provide safety and services to protect our well-being are protected as well. Right. That's what's missing.
Okay. All right. So after 24/7, the word to, and then what else did you just say?
At the end of our well-being, are protected as well.
That's right.
And 1, 2, 3, 4 lines from the bottom. This resolution is to make sure that law enforcement and emergency services, not medical, personnel.
Emergency services personnel. Okay.
Thank you.
There's anyone else?
But it's little things.
Carol?
Yeah. Packet page 18, the very last paragraph, where it's my own comments. Ms. Chalk said it is the right and duty of citizens to let their voices be heard. She asked if there is anything that could be done, and I had asked in our role as elected representatives to help with lobbying efforts, including a resolution.
Is there anything that could be done in our
roles
as elected representatives?
Yes.
I will say something.
And I'm happy to have the tape checked for that before you change it.
I was just going to say that all of these are sort of pending the staff checking the tape, making sure that this reflects what was actually said. Okay. All right. Anybody else? All right, I have a couple, so I will take you to page 15, July 6th. Just before privilege of the floor for legislators, I was talking about the Pine Tree Road. That last sentence, Cornell University and the Town of Ithaca are using the transportation GEIS in planning this project. It's not that they're working on the GEIS for the project, so... checking the tape, it should say, are using the transportation GEIS in planning this project. On packet page 18, the last large paragraph, about the middle, Ms. Robertson is about R. Curie. He might like to be senator, but he's actually congressman. So while we're there, this sentence is a little confusing. Ms. Robertson said this morning, Congressman R. Curie told her he is in favor of the increased federal share going to states. This is about the FMAP budget. Ms. Robertson said this morning, Congressman R. Curie told her he is in favor of the increased federal share going to states. packet, page 33, very top paragraph. This is where I mentioned before the Medicaid Commission. As of that date, I had not been asked to serve yet, so I'd like that sentence to say. She also reported she has asked to serve on a NYSAC commission to transition Medicaid from counties to the state. So there's some deletions there and changing countywide to NYSAC. She has asked to serve on a NYSAC commission. Almost done. Packet page 42. Just before the vote, this is about gas drilling, and this is about the planning position. Ms. Robertson spoke of studies provided by Dr. Thiem that addressed the delayed impacts of gas drilling. That is way too much of a summary, and I will give this to Kathy. Ms. Robertson spoke of studies provided by Dr. Thiem that showed there is a 5 to 10 year delay between when the impacts of drilling are felt by the community and when any new taxes are paid by the companies.
That will be checked against
absolutely.
The tape, right?
Yeah, all of that. Yeah. And one more. Packet page 45, discussion of the resolution that we voted on tonight. First paragraph under capital plan review, the last sentence, second to last sentence, a resolution will be coming to the next legislature meeting to direct the county administrator to explore alternatives for space for the occupants of that building, not to seek new space. I thought that sounded too much like to go out and go ahead and rent. I believe I said to explore alternatives for that space. So if there are no objections, those are my submissions. Anyone else? All right, ready to vote on those amended minutes. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed?
No.
Is that a vote no?
Yeah, it is a vote no.
Okay, that is 10 in favor, 3 opposed. 11 in favor, 3 opposed. Frank, Kathy, and Jim. So.
What?
No, I thought you raised your hand.
No, I'm voting in favor. Want to do this again?
We'll do this again. All in favor of the amended minutes, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Opposed. 2 opposed. 12-2. Sorry, Frank.
That's okay.
All right. We do have an executive session that we asked for, and it won't be long. Do I have a motion? Please. I have a motion to go into. Those are probably the consent agenda. Do I have a motion? This is for real estate and personnel, and I do not expect to take any action after coming out. Motion by Leslin, a second by Brian. All in favor of executive session, please raise your hand. Any opposed? All right, we will. We will take a 5-minute break to shut the cameras down.
How about a 7-minute break?
A 7-minute break. Let's try to get here. 5 minutes.